This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 21. The Limpet Leaves Us. It's farewell to Shiv Chandrabal. He's finally finished his test career after about 300 years playing, by the feeling of it, and certainly batting. So we have a little tribute to the legacy that he has left to us. But we also answer your questions on the show. We have a problem with getting the ball to spin later in a bowling spell for a spinner. And we have a guy with a real problem about understanding how to nip the ball off the seam. Let's see if we can help them out on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is half an hour of cricket-related chat, all to do with helping you improve your game or helping you to help others improve their games. It's all about coaching cricket. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And alongside me are two cricket coaches who can also help you improve your game. First of all, it is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Let's go the other way around this time. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Wow, first off.
I know. Well, I started saying you, and I thought just roll with it.
I'm very well, anyway. How are you, David?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much. And alongside Lavers in internet terms, anyway, it's the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraz. Although you're not at Millfield today.
I'm not. I'm out at Forte Village in Sardinia doing some coaching out here for cricket with Philip De Freitas. But we've also got Karen Atkinson, who's the Loughborough Lightning netball coach and has played a million times for England at netball. Yeah. And we've got Nick Easter, England and Harlequins, and Paul Grayson with us as well. So we've got a lot of sport going on. It's good to be around the guys.
Yeah, lots of people running around, getting active and doing some exciting stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been good so far, mate, and the weather's been kind.
Good. Well, it's to your advantage if you're in Sardinia, isn't it?
It certainly is. Although I'd have to say, playing on a football pitch at the moment, we're getting some good amounts of turn off of the 4G grass as we're going along at present.
Oh, wow. Makes for interesting cricket. We've had some news in the cricket world today that Shivnarine Chandrapal, the batsman who just seems to go on forever, has finally come to an end in that he's been dropped by the West Indies for the latest test series. And I thought he comes up so often, not only on this show, but also in the Pitch Vision Academy website articles. It's definitely worth talking a little bit about Shiv and the way that he played and the unusual style that he had and what kind of a legacy he leaves for players going into the future. So, Gareth, have you had much experience with Shiv Chandrapal?
Yeah, a lot. I've watched him bat a lot, unfortunately, because we had two series against West Indies where it was very difficult to dislodge him. He was probably at the peak of his powers back in 2009, 2008, and he was really the only batter that would cause any of our bowlers any problems, and inevitably he was in right the way through to the last person getting out or the penultimate person getting out. So a fantastic player, and really, developed his own method and mastered his method. But the more we know about how people individually go about their stuff, and the more we're recognising that in sport and in cricket in general, the more we're realising that actually his legacy is that we're probably going to let people get on with what they're doing as opposed to trying to change him. Because I'm sure that at certain stages over his formative years in cricket that people did try to change him, but he's held strong to himself and stayed with it and scored a billion runs all around the globe in all formats of a game.
He seemed to get more and more crabby as time went on, didn't he, Lavers?
Yeah, but he kept going, he kept playing a role, he kept being important for the team, and I think that's the key thing. He was still playing a valuable role in the side, wherever he played, whether it be over here in county cricket or with West Indies in test cricket. So he kept applying his game to the situation he was in. And there were the days where he did play that dashing role in one-day cricket, and that probably became less and less as the years went on. But, he had his method, and he adapted it to the cause of the team. And I think up until well, up until now, it's been a valuable role that he's been playing.
It's one of those classic, it's almost a cliche in itself to say, oh, you could never coach somebody to play like that. But Gareth, knowing what we know about the way that people work, are there things within the method that Shiv Chanderpaul used that could be coached?
I think it's more a case of if you get somebody who does some things like he does, that we let them do it. And we assess whether those things are helping or hindering, rather than just going, that doesn't look right. And that's probably the biggest thing that Shiv will leave behind, is that, you know, ultimately it's about the runs that you score and the challenge that you present to the batter, to the bowling side and the fielding side. And he certainly did that, you know, way and above anybody else within his era. You know, after Lara finished playing, he was literally the guy that held that that batting side together. So, yeah, I think you just let people go and until you see something that is definitely a hindrance, not something that you see as being not technical or not traditional. And that's certainly what I get from him. The fact is that, as Labour's talked about a minute ago, he actually could strike a mean ball as well. And I think as more dashers came around him and more people that were power players, the likes of Gale and Pollard and Samuels and those guys, his role had to adapt to be a little bit more limpet-like, I suppose, so those guys could express themselves around him. And but I can remember days where he took Jimmy Anderson, of all people, apart, where he would deliberately wind Jimmy up by a few little comments and just by, you know, pulling away at the last minute and getting Jimmy to get over that level where he was in control, and all of a sudden fours would be going here, there and everywhere. He was an absolute master at that. And I think the international game's going to miss somebody like Shiv, but talking to guys that have played with him at Derbyshire and various other places, the influence that he's had on all of those guys and the way that he thinks about his cricket, the way that he practices, the way that he mentally prepares for each innings is something that I think we all can learn from.
Yeah, and there's certainly no there's certainly no coaching book that's ever going to be produced that offers that as the perfect way to bat. I guess what I was driving at really is, what are there things in there that some people might be able to use? You know, that open stance, for example, that exaggerated open stance, could that become more common if people find that they're enjoying it?
A really good thing I'd pick out of what Shiv does is just rhythm, and something that you can look at. People are very visually at the position he's in the start and the position he's in at the end, and what goes on in between. There's a lot of movement, but the one thing it does show you is how important rhythm can be to certain players. So consistency of movement and timing of movement, which for him has been so repetitive over the years, and rhythm for some people is what they need. And some people will say you need to be still. Some people will say you need to do this and do that. If you're a rhythm player and you like to have that element of movement beforehand, and you end up in a reasonably good position, but you have that rhythm that takes you there and it's repetitive and it's consistent, then that's something that that anyone could try and have as part of their game.
I mean, one of the reasons why his stance is so wide and open is the fact that I should imagine he's probably a left motor eye, the motor eye being the eye that judges motion better and can track the moving object better. So whilst he's watching somebody coming into bowl and watching somebody getting ready to release, he's given himself the best chance of taking in as much information from that moving object or that moving person by ensuring that is pointing down the wicket as best as possible. And obviously the way he can do that is to start in that open position. It allows all of that visual information to come in that helps his decision making as that ball gets released.
I remember watching him when he was touring in England once on the telly and thinking to myself that one of the things that commentators were saying was, yes, he's got this open stance and he does this big movement. But the important thing is he's still when the ball is released. And I thought, it doesn't look like he is to me. So I would pause the live feed and look to see if he was still at the point of release. And he was the first batsman that I saw that he wasn't still when the ball was coming out of the batsman's hand. He did have that big movement, but he hadn't quite finished it by the time that the ball was coming out. And I always found that quite interesting, that it became a truism that he was still at the point of release when he didn't look like it to me.
Yeah, he wasn't still at the point of release, mate, and quite a few players aren't. And, you know, he's somebody that walks from the top, going back to all of my stuff in action types. He needs to have that feeling of motion going through his body. And the chances are that most of the balls that he faced in Test cricket when he was batting as he wanted to bat, he would have been still moving at point of release in the same way as a Gilchrist did. You know, Gilchrist's left foot would be moving as the ball was being released, or even it would start to move after the ball was being released. I look at Ben Stokes, who's obviously had a fantastic week with England in Test cricket with the bat and the ball, but mostly with the bat, and his foot moves post-ball release, which then triggers him, and it sort of sends a pulse through his body that enables him then to move into contact. So, you know, the notion of being still for everybody at point of release is one that a lot of great players around the world are challenging. For some players, like a Graham Smith and a Kevin Peterson and a Chris Gayle, that stillness at point of release is absolutely crucial.
It's logically attractive to say, well, you know, if you're absolutely still, then you've got your best chance of picking up the ball. But it doesn't always work like that.
It's very easy. It's called convenience coaching, that is, because we don't have to think about it too much and we can just chuck that blanket over the top of everybody else. But we've only got to watch a game of cricket to realise that some people do it differently. And the great thing about seeing so much of cricket on the television and on the internet nowadays is actually we can watch that people are doing that at the top levels of a game as well. So Shiv was one of those guys that would often be moving at point of release or even moving post point of release before he then made his movement into the ball. But Stokes, a classic example this week, does exactly the same. And Adam Gilchrist, if you want to watch some of his most destructive innings, you watch that left foot just moving post ball release, then to allow him, get that little bit of impulse and away we go. It's called a motor leg. So it starts the motor and enables him to get into that position to hit the ball.
Something I was actually talking about yesterday was point of decision as versus point of release. So point of release, there actually isn't a whole lot of information there for you. Whereas your point of decision, which is obviously slightly later, there's a whole load of information. So having a consistent position, and again, it doesn't necessarily have to be still, but trying to work out where your point of decision is. And if you're a fast mover with fast hands, your point of decision is often a little bit later. And people are quite slow, might have a slightly earlier point of decision, but I think it's a slightly different thing to point of release being the be-all and end-all. Your decision isn't necessarily made there. There are different moments within the action, either before and after, where you're making the decision, which will vary for different people.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sam. Great point.
Well, I will miss being able to use him as an example because, you know, he's not a current player anymore, and it's, you know, the less current the player, the less relevant that they become. But I'm sure in the future there will be more and more unorthodox guys coming in to take his place and become, you know, the example of successful unorthodoxy in quotation marks. So thanks, Shiv, for doing that for me, and hopefully he'll have a long career in whatever he goes on to.
Yeah, he will do. Whatever it is, he's going to be a success at it, that is for sure.
He's certainly got the focus. Let's finish up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the first of the three questions, so let's get started. To get the edge, you need more than the basics.
No.
No.
Play for your teammates over yourself.
Yes.
Yes.
Last of all, stop being afraid of bowling actions.
Yes.
Yes.
It's the question section now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. A couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show, and we do our very best to answer them. Hopefully we give some good tips out, but no matter whether we do or we don't, at the end of the show, we pick a winner of a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can get even more advice from one of our top coaches over there. If you want to send in your question to us, you can email coach@pitchvision.com, or we'll have the phone number and other details towards the end of the show. And the first question comes in from Saurav. And Saurav says, as an off spinner, one of my biggest problems, barring fitness, has been the ability to maintain revs on the ball consistently for the whole spell. I start out well for an over or two, and suddenly I find that I'm reducing the revs and resorting to effectively grenade lobs, trying to put the ball on a length. Depending on the quality of the batsman facing, I find that I become less effective towards overs 4 to 5 of my spell. For 2020, that's not a problem, but for 40-over league, it's a big issue. What would you suggest to maintain rhythm and revolutions for a longish spell?
It's a great question, and I'm going to take you right back to the start of it, actually. You've put in barring fitness with a little smiley face for us, and I think there could be something in this. It's hard work to spin a ball and put consistently high revs on an energy onto a cricket ball. It's not an easy thing to do, and in order to do that, you have to be strong. And that's not necessarily about aerobic fitness or running long distances. It's about having the ability to transfer momentum through the body in a consistent fashion for long periods of time. And I should imagine that one of the challenges that you're facing here, Saurav, is to maintain your fitness over those longer games. You know, 2020, you say, isn't a big problem. You've got 4 overs to get out of the way. That's 24 balls. You can manage that, no problem. But as time goes on and you start working into 40-over cricket, where you're working up, doubling those overs and doubling the balls, the amount that you're having to bowl it, those revolutions are coming off. And often what we find is that the place where, in the bowling action, which most affects the revolutions on the ball are the hips, and then the hips going into the shoulder rotation. So as the hips square up, if they can keep firing and squaring, then that's going to chuck more momentum up the body into the shoulders. The shoulder girdle squares up, and then obviously all of that momentum goes up into the through the arm and into the hand and into the fingers, most importantly for you as an off spinner. So I would start by getting into your fitness, and by that I mean doing a lot of work around squats and lunges and core. And in particular for spinners, we look to try and do as much of that work with our arms over the top of our heads to simulate what's going to happen within our bowling action. And I believe a while ago, and David might be able to hook it out, I put together a number of exercises for spinners, which are mostly around the lunges and then the twists around different lunges and squat patterns, all with using a broomstick, by having your arms up in the air, holding the broomstick, simulating where your arms are going to be for a long time in your bowling action. And it might be worth him putting those as notes alongside the programme that we've done here, the podcast that we've done here to show you those. But really that core area is absolutely crucial. And when I talk about the core for me is from the top of your knees all the way through up to the bottom of your ribs. So it's not just sit-ups, it's not just planks, it's also working on squats and lunges to get those legs strong. Because if those legs can transfer momentum into the hips and those hips snap round, then you're going to have a great effect running up the body and into the back of the ball that you'll be able to sustain for more than 4 overs.
Yeah, that's interesting what you say, Gary, about having to express a lot of power very quickly and then very quickly recover from that to do it again. That's a very unusual thing. It doesn't happen in a lot of sports, where you have this one expression of power that you use your whole body, and then you do that 6 times, and then you have a little rest, and then you've got to do it again. that's quite a strange thing for the body to be doing. And it does take, that's why people say, I need overs in my legs, isn't it? Because that's exactly what's happening. You're developing your fitness specifically towards bowling by bowling. But you need to do more than that as well. And that area, I think, of recovery is really important. The faster you can recover from bowling a ball or bowling an over, the better your next over is going to be, because you don't carry the fatigue over as much. And there's nothing you can do to stop the fatigue building up altogether. Everyone's going to get tired eventually. But the better your recovery time, the better you can deal with those longer spells. I think that's crucial as well. Having that strength there, having that kind of power endurance, I guess, is the closest phrase that you want. The ability to express that power over and over again with a relatively short period of rest. And, Lavers, I guess this happens a lot with younger spinners who are, still not there in terms of developing their core and developing the strength in their hips and their fingers and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's difficult
difficult with the younger guys because they've got a number of things they're developing at the same time. So they may be just learning to spin a ball. They're also growing and they're either developing coordination or losing coordination, depending on where they are in a growth phase. They're also trying to learn some sort of tactical application and have a bit of a plan of what they want to do. They may be moving from a small ball to a big ball. So I think the added difficulty comes in with pinpointing why things are going wrong sometimes. And with an adult who's doing the same things day in, day out, their body's pretty much in the same state as it is every day. The ball they're using is the same. The format they're playing is the same. Their role within the side is the same. If you look at a young cricketer, a lot of the time they're playing another 15 game one day, and they're playing a second 11 game or a first 11 game for their club. They're using different types of ball at different times. There's so much going on that pinpointing exactly what the issue is can be quite tough. So sometimes the diagnosis is the most important thing. After you've done that, I guess it's a similar process to you would do with anyone, but you've also got to manage the learning process and the communication that maybe they're very good at or maybe they struggle with. So there's just a lot more going on, which are potential obstacles, but they'll just challenge you a little bit as a coach to kind of streamline all the information you're getting so you can help appropriately.
And so would there be any additional advice that we can offer, sort of apart from work on those key aspects of your fitness?
Well, I think look at the hips, look at the role of the hips. That's pretty important, you know, so get somebody to video you from the side. And at point of release, what we're looking for ideally is the hips to be slightly, your right hip as an off spinner, to be slightly in front of your left hip, or at worst, square. And it's certainly something that we've worked on with a number of spinners at school who have made significant increase in their ability to spin the ball and their ability then to sustain that over a period of time. It's something that I'd not looked at before this year, but it's had a really profound effect. So that would always be my starting point. Without senior action, that would always be my starting point.
Next question is from Arjun. And Arjun says, fast bowlers use swing and cutters to trouble batsmen. I know how to swing a ball, but I've seen that some bowlers bowl with a straight seam position without any angling of the seam. And the ball moves away or into the right-hander after pitching. The ball hits the seam and the commentators use the words nip around off the seam. My question is, why does that happen? Is it because of the irregularity of the seam helping to change its path? Please help. So he wants to, but he can swing it, but he wants to seam it too. What's going on?
Well, it sounds like he's looking for different methods, which is great. So first of all, he's identifying that there are going to be days where it's not swinging, and that's probably the situation he's in, where some days he goes out and he can go to what he knows, which is his swing and delivery, and some days he can't. So he's looking for a plan B, which is excellent. Ultimately, there's that landing on the seam that we're looking for, which is potentially going to create that change of direction. Something that Jimmy Anderson talked about in one of his videos, I remember, was instead of trying to get it bolt up, he likes to land it just on the side of the seam. So if you land it on the seam and the seam is fairly flat, if you land it perfectly true on the seam, then the ball will probably continue off in a fairly straight line. Where if you find a little bit of an angle and it hits the corner or just on the side of the seam, then you're more likely to get a little bit of deviation. And that's what he talks about doing, whether that is with a ball with a fairly upright seam or a wobble ball delivery where it's just scrambling, it's hopefully going to catch left or right. So essentially, he's right in what he's suggested. There's probably a little bit more to it than that. So we can think about the conditions and how we want to seam it and where we want to seam a ball from. So if he is going to get that movement, what type of length do we want to get it from? And then how can we identify what that length is in different conditions? So depending on where Arjun is and the conditions he's playing, he might find that the seam ball is actually a little bit easier or hotter. Over here in England, you can pitch up fairly well and still get a bit of movement off the seam because of the ability for the ball to go through the top of the surface, and that creates a little bit of change of direction quite quickly. He may be over in England, he could be anywhere in the world, so he'll have to adapt his conditions appropriately, but he's certainly along the right lines.
It seems to me, anecdotally, that some guys can just do it better than others. Is there some kind of a secret to it, Gareth?
Well, I think the secret is why you do it to start off with, and this is to build on Labour's answer. So you look at really good exponents of this, somebody like Jason Gillespie, who's obviously been in the news as a potential candidate for the England cricket coaching role, but he used to run up and he had such a good wrist position behind the ball, rarely swung it hugely. Glenn McGrath, very similarly, rarely swung the ball massively, but really drove the ball with a pretty straight seam into the pitch with, and ultimately would hope to hit the seam hard enough that it would hit one side or another. Sometimes they didn't know which way it was going to go, but if they got the ball into the top of off stump on a regular enough basis and there was a little bit of sideward movement off of hitting the pitch really hard on a good length, then they were going to cause problems. And I think that was the asset for both of those, because, as I say, they weren't people who swung the ball hugely throughout their career, but yet, you know, picked up nearly 900 test wickets between the pair of them, which is a phenomenal effort. And then you look at somebody like Stuart Clarke that came on the scene and played such a prominent role in that Ashes win in 2006-07, where he did exactly the same, but he started to do the wobble ball as well during that series. So that one that Sam talked about is where you have just a little bit of different pressure on each side of the ball with your fingers, which would make the ball slightly go down on a canted seam, which would alternate one side or the other on its journey into the pitch. And Stuart Clarke got 7 or 8 wickets in that series from a wobble ball rather than just slamming the ball straight down the wicket with a straight seam into length. But the crucial thing is why you're doing it, and also the lengths that you hit, because the beauty of seam movement is that it goes late. You don't get any time to check out the seam in the air. You don't get any early indicators of which way the ball is going to be deviating before it hits the ground. And if you're doing it from full enough on the pitch, the batter can't really adjust to it. All they can do is hold the line of the bat that they believe the ball is going to come on and hope for the best. And that's why late seam movement is unbelievably difficult to play against as a batter. I know Graham Gooch talks about how to try and counteract it, but it's so, so difficult. So all I would say is check out your wrist position. If you can get that ball going down with a straight seam, then I'm sure you'll get some difference, because the ball's not going to hit the same part of the ball every single time. That's an impossibility. And then try to play around with the wobble seam by having different pressures on the end of your fingers between the two fingers that are on top of the ball, and see where you get. But Jason Gillespie, Stuart Clarke and Glenn McGrath are three fantastic examples of people that mastered that.
I think it's key that you have the right equipment for this sort of stuff as well. So if you are practicing this and you're playing on a flat deck and you've got a ball that's 200 overs old, then you're on a bit of a hiding to nothing, really, and you're experimenting and you might be actually doing it right, but you're getting no feedback from it and no actual result. So if you can do, try and get a ball that's actually got a bit of a seam on it, which is in a condition where you can actually get some kind of movement, rather than having a kookaburra ball that's 80 overs old and there's nothing there and it's basically bowling with a tennis ball. So just make sure you've got something that if you do get it right, you're actually going to see results and you're actually going to get a bit of feedback from the delivery of bowling or from the ball you're using.
It's got to be a hard seam, isn't it, Sam? You know, when you put a ball in your fingers, you know whether the ball's still got that bit of hardness in the seam, and sometimes you get like a puddiny thing, don't you, where you can almost sort of squish the seam. And obviously the harder the seam, the less time the ball's going to stay on the pitch, or the more time, depending on the pitch condition, that the more time that seam's going to then dig down into the pitch to get that deviation. So the harder the seam, the better, really. And if you do get a soft seam ball, then one of the things that I've seen a lot of people do, and it's become more and more commonplace over here now, if you get a soft ball, instead of trying to land it on the seam, which is going straight, then you can use the slight variations by holding it cross seam, something that Stuart Broad's done really well over the years. But a lot of us subcontinent cricketers from the years gone by in the 80s and 90s, I know Kapil Dev used to do it, I knew Imran Khan used to do it as well, when the seam went soft, just to go so you get that difference between the ball hitting the string, even though it's soft string, and hitting the normal side of a ball as well. You get those differences in reaction. So all you're looking for really is a good release position. That whichever way you're trying to do it, straight seam or cross seam, if you've got a good release position, then you're giving yourself the best chance of success. So from sunny Sardinia to bonnie Scotland, we're going to get David up on top of that soapbox. Over to you, mate. 1 minute. No, not 1 second more. Not 1 second less.
We've had a pretty horrible start to the club cricket season here. Unfortunately, our batsmen have not managed a 50 yet in over 30 digs between them in the top six. So it's a bit of a terrible start. And we've been talking about this in selection. And one of the things that we've been thinking about is trying to inject a little bit of youthful enthusiasm into the side. So this week we are bringing in a young player who perhaps is not quite ready for first team cricket. He's 16 years old, but he's absolutely brimming with confidence. He likes to hit the ball hard. He likes to bowl ripping leg spin, and he's got a brilliant bullet arm. He's an excellent fielder. So I feel like he's going to go into the side absolutely filled with confidence, and he's not going to care what people think about previous reputations. He's going to go in and try and turn that side around just purely by the youthful enthusiasm that he brings to the team. And if it works, then perhaps some of the other guys around him will hit some of those 50s that we so badly need to get this coming weekend. And that is the end of the show for another week. Half an hour has passed by very quickly, as it always does. Before we go, we need to decide on a winner of the prize, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Surav's question about fitness for an off-spinner and getting through a long spell. And we had Arjun's question about what seam bowling is really all about. Which one did you prefer this week, Garrus?
I'm going to go with Arjun this week. I thought it was a good question. I think it's a question that brings around answers around variation in the use of bowlers and different styles of bowler as well, because we talk about swing a lot. So, yeah, the McGrath, the Clark and the Gillespie examples, I think, are good ones. So, Arjun, this week, over to you.
Okay, Arjun, and there's some fast bowling courses in there that you can have a look at and enjoy, and hopefully it'll give you some advice on getting the ball nipping around off the seam, as you've heard the commentators say. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted their question answered and also wanted a chance to win that prize, how would they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can get us on social media as well. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad, and Facebook is pretty easy to find, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. There's also a way to listen to the show every week if you like it. You can just go into your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. Tap that subscribe button and you'll get it every week straight to your device. And if you prefer to use a computer, then you can stream it online as well. Just head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link at the top. And you will see the button to click to stream the show, or download the MP3 file onto your computer, or subscribe using the good old-fashioned RSS feed. And there's all the show notes in there with links and things, so you can find out more about all the stuff we've been talking about this week and every other week. So that is all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, boys.